It's Wednesday, August 5th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. First, some quick good news out of Cottleville, Missouri, a little town there in Missouri whose Board of Aldermen has just voted unanimously to recommend the state of Missouri legalize medical marijuana. It's the third such city in Missouri to do just that. Also, the Seattle Hemp Fest is coming up next weekend, August 15th and 16th, and I'm still making the call for volunteers to help me there at Seattle Hemp Fest. I need folks that will help gather up donations for Normal Show Live. I need people to pass out flyers and other literature, and to take pictures and help me out with various equipment and cameras and so on. So, if you're interested in volunteering, send me an email at stash@normal.org with the heading Seattle Volunteer or Hempfest Volunteer, something that's going to make me notice it. Some of you have already emailed me before. If you do me the favor of just emailing me again to be sure that I don't miss you. And the best way to be able to keep track of what I'll be doing at Seattle Hemp Fest is to follow me on Twitter so that you can get the updates on your cell phone. It's RadicalRuss at Twitter.com, so check it out. What time is that? That's right, it's time to check our normal calendar of events available at norml.org/calendar. Tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania chapter of Normal, Philly Normal, will be meeting at 4722 Baltimore Avenue. This is at a place called the A Space, and they always meet on the first and third Thursdays of each month. For more information, check out phillynormal.org. And if you'd like to get your Normal chapter's events listed on the Normal calendar of events, send me an email at stash@normal.org. And I'll send you back some instructions on how to create your Google Calendar. It's a normal shout-out. In our normal shout-outs, we're looking to recruit in the state of Connecticut to help reform a Connecticut Normal chapter there. Also, I found a news story about the League of Women Voters in Southern Connecticut putting forth a study on whether or not Connecticut should decriminalize, and they're looking for some help with that. If you'd like more information, send me an email, and I'll be sure to get that information out to you. Also, the state of Mississippi emailed this week. We'd love to get a chapter started in Mississippi. Rockford, Illinois is interested in getting started, and Tri-State Normal is trying to form in the area of Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky, where those three states meet. You can send an email to them at tristatenormal@zoominfo.net. And of course, this weekend I will be in Boise, Idaho, trying to get Idahoans to start a Boise Normal chapter. I'll be at the Flying Pie Pizza at 4 p.m. Mountain Time, at Fairview Avenue. That's the Fairview Avenue Flying Pie, 4 to 6 p.m. I've got stickers and flyers and buttons and pins and all of the determination in the world to get a normal chapter started in my hometown. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with Normal making the pages of the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal with a copyright flap over our use of Barack Obama's image in our Yes We Cannabis Normal Conference poster. Los Angeles activist Craig X. Rubin is offering free marijuana to the first 500 people who will testify at the LA City Council. Georgia representative thinks it would be a good idea to cane and execute marijuana users like they do in Singapore. And for some reefer madness, we visit with the not-so-famous Dr. Drew Edwards from the Ennoble Foundation, who says that marijuana is the drug for life's future losers. It is the middle of the week, so we're going to visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine as well, giving you a dose of some cannabis science. We take a look at structural brain imaging of frequent cannabis users, a new study showing head and neck cancer risk may be reduced by those who use cannabis, and a look at health insurance reimbursements for medical marijuana and how those could help reduce healthcare costs. It's Reggae Wednesday for our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, featuring today Rebel Youth Family with their tune Eyes Red. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Obama photographer, quote, irritated, end quote, over Normal's Yes We Cannabis poster. From today's Washington Post's Reliable Source. For their annual conference poster, they took an old photo of cool dude college freshman Obama puffing away, on a regular cigarette, mind you, and tweaked it just ever so slightly to fit their message, Yes We Cannabis. Think it might be a problem for the president, who opposes legalization? It's really a problem for the photographer. Lisa Jack, an Obama classmate at Occidental College, snapped the image in 1980, one in a series of photos that never saw the light of day, until she debuted them in Time's 2008 Person of the Year issue. She had no idea her photo had been appropriated by Normal until we told her Tuesday. Quote, "They do not have my permission," said Jack, a psychology professor in Minnesota. "These photos are absolutely not to be used in this way. I really made a grand effort to do this properly, and I'm very irritated. If I'd wanted these to be used for political purposes, I'd have sold them to Hillary years ago," end quote. Jack, whose photos now have a gallery show in L.A., grudgingly admits, quote, "It's really cool," end quote, that the images are already iconic enough to steal. Well, I don't know about stealing. There's such a thing in copyright law called fair use, which is when someone is using a copyrighted image for satire purposes. According to the U.S. Copyright Office's fact sheet on fair use, they say that Section 107 contains a list of the various purposes for which the reproduction of a particular work may be considered fair, such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, and research. Section 107 also sets out 4 factors to be considered in determining whether or not a particular use is fair, including the first choice, which is the purpose and character of the use, including whether such use is of commercial nature or is for non-profit educational purposes. We are selling the poster, no doubt, but the we in question is a non-profit educational foundation. It is obviously a political satire meant as a criticism and comment about President Obama continuing the failed policy of cannabis prohibition. It promotes a conference presented for the education of cannabis activists and the general public. Now, compare that poster to two satires that I found in my old favorite Mad magazine. One of them is a photoshopped Barack Obama head, which must have come from someone's copyrighted photo, pasted onto Steve Carell's body in a 40-year-old virgin movie poster that I'm pretty sure is copyrighted as well. But it's obviously a political satire. In another example, they have a shot of Michael Phelps in the pool, probably a copyrighted shot by the U.S. Olympic Committee or the International Olympic Committee, with a joint photoshopped in, kind of like the normal poster, and the service marks of High Times magazine to make it look like Phelps is on the cover of High Times. It also has an inset shot of Harold and Kumar as well. But it is a fair use parody. One big difference, though, is that Mad magazine is not a non-profit entity. Now, the flap has also gotten some play on the Wall Street Journal's law blog, which says, fair use cases are often a blogger's dream, what with their angry celebrities, well-known or at least visible works of art, and strident accusations of theft. But as much fun as J.D. Salinger, Woody Allen, and J.K. Rowling have provided us over the months on the fair use front, the following just might take the cake as best fair use smackdown ever. But is it, quote, adulterated enough to comply with the fair use laws, end quote? The standard, a copyright lawyer tells us, is whether there was a transformative use. And that doesn't necessarily mean the image has to be transformed. An image can remain exactly the same and satisfy fair use if the picture is framed in a way that sends a message. In other words, its use is transformed. He says, quote, for example, a Nancy Reagan picture on the poster would send a parodic message. This one is a closer call, end quote. Well, I'm pretty sure taking the Obama image, putting a joint in his fingertips, centering it in a 60s acid rock style poster, and lampooning his signature campaign phrase, "Yes, we can," is pretty transformative. Especially considering the context of his famous cop to using marijuana frequently in his youth, his recent online polls where legalizing marijuana was chosen by the public as a top political concern, and his subsequent chuckling brush-off of the online audience. Stay tuned to this podcast for more information on this story as it develops. Craig X. Rubin offering free marijuana to patients if they speak at LA City Council. From Examiner.com. Last night it was announced on Facebook and through Indie Bay that the Beverly Hills Green Cross Medical Marijuana Collective will be giving out an 1/8 ounce of Beverly Hills Haze to the first 500 medical marijuana patients to speak to the Los Angeles Planning and Land Use Management Committee at 10 a.m. on Thursday, August 6th. Patrick Duff of the Royal Temple of Zion and Discount Relief Collective announced they would donate an additional 1/100 ounce of medical marijuana, so the first 100 medical marijuana patients to speak will receive a total of 1/4 ounce of medicine. Said Rubin this afternoon, quote, we're taking a page out of 60s activism. We need to clog the room with speakers, make it take an hour or two for each hearing instead of the 8 to 10 hearings an hour they have been doing, end quote. The meeting will be at Los Angeles City Hall, 200 North Spring Street, room 350. There will be no video, but the meeting may be heard live via the internet or via phone by dialing 213-621-CITY, 310-547-CITY, 310-471-CITY, or 818-904-9450. You do not need to be a resident of Los Angeles or live in Los Angeles to listen via phone. I do not like at all the idea of bribing people to take part in their representative democracy. If there is such a need for more than the existing 700 to 800 dispensaries in the Los Angeles area, then the patients suffering this hardship should attend the meeting of their own free will. The fact that people need to be enticed with $60 worth of medicine suggests to me that this is really more about entrepreneurs being shut out of business opportunities than patients suffering from lack of access. That Rubin would exploit the poorest, sickest patients who can't afford cannabis at one of the hundreds of existing dispensaries in order that some may open up more $60 per eighth dispensaries is even more distasteful. How would anyone here feel if a national right-to-life organization offered to pay 500 women $60 each to testify at a council meeting to oppose the opening of a new Planned Parenthood clinic? Or, let's flip it, what if a national reproductive rights organization made the same offer to support new zoning laws forcing abortion protesters so far away from the Planned Parenthood clinic that they wouldn't be seen or heard? What if the Democratic Party offered $60 to each person willing to attend a town hall to voice support for a public health care option, or if the Republicans did the same for those who would oppose it? Do we really want to have a democracy where bribes and money unfairly influence the political process? Yeah, I said that with a straight face. You know, maybe Ruben's on to something. What do you think, Stashers? Take the poll in the Stash Pot quiz that I have posted on the Craig X. Rubin post at stash.normal.org, or check the right sidebar for the Stash Pot quiz archives. It's a little icon that looks like a Jeopardy board, and that'll take you to all the quizzes. I really want to know, what do you think about this? Georgia Representative Tommy Benton, Republican of Jefferson, favors caning and executions for marijuana crimes. This just in from a Georgia stasher as part of our ongoing series called Politicians on Pot, where listeners send in replies from their elected officials regarding marijuana law reform. Thanks for the email. We will have to agree to disagree on this and whether or not money is wasted. I am opposed to the legalization of marijuana. I think we should go to caning for people caught using and maybe execute dealers. That would solve the problem as well. That is what they do in Singapore, and they don't have a drug problem. But then they have less liberty than we do here. Representative Tommy Benton, tommy.benton@house.ga.gov. Isn't it amazing how much of the Constitution an elected official is willing to throw away for the drug war exception? Here's a look at Singapore's drug laws. The law creates a presumption of trafficking for certain threshold amounts, for example, 30 grams of cannabis. It also creates a presumption that a person possesses drugs if he possesses the keys to a premises containing the drugs, and that, quote, any person found in or escaping from any place or premises which is proved and presumed to be used for the purpose of smoking or administering a controlled drug shall, until the contrary is proved, be presumed to have been smoking or administering a controlled drug in that place or premises, end quote. Thus, one risks arrest for drug use by simply being in the company of drug users. The law also allows officers to search premises and individuals without a search warrant if he, quote, reasonably suspects that there is to be found a controlled drug or article liable to seizure, end quote. So, if you don't mind sacrificing essential liberty, if you're cool with cops searching you and your property on mere suspicion or being considered guilty because you happen to be in a nightclub where someone unknown to you got caught sniffing coke in the restroom, or if you think it's reasonable to execute someone for possessing 1.06 ounces of pot, you can have a relatively drug-free society. The United States per capita rate of drug crimes is 41st out of 60 countries surveyed by NationMaster.com at 560.1 drug crimes per 100,000 people. Singapore ranks near the bottom at number 53, with a rate almost one-twelfth that of America, or 46.8 per 100,000. Yet Spain, with its fairly liberal drug laws, ranks number 56th in the survey, with only 27.9 drug offenses per 100,000. That 30 grams of cannabis that gets you the hangman's noose in Singapore isn't even a crime in Spain, and neither is buying and selling of seeds and cultivating up to 5 plants. Now, certainly, you're going to have a lower rate of drug crimes when many of the drug crimes aren't being counted, because Spain has similar personal possession decriminalization for other drugs as well. But does anyone think that Spain has descended into chaos? By all accounts, it seems to be at least as nice a place as Singapore, even though in Spain they lock up in prisons 2.6 times fewer citizens for all crimes. It is tough to compare, as Singapore is a city-state on an island, and Spain and America are larger continental countries with both urban and rural areas. However, regardless of crime rate, it is simply un-American to suggest that we should be whipping people to punish them for smoking a joint.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Surprise! Marijuana rehab counselor believes marijuana is the drug for life's future losers. The not famous Dr. Drew Edwards, the executive director of the Ennoble Foundation, has an opinion piece up at jacksonville.com. Unsurprisingly, the man who makes a living off of the court-enforced mandatory rehab of minor marijuana offenders believes marijuana smoking makes you a loser.
A study published in 2007 by the medical journal Addiction confirms what many of us have observed for years. People who regularly smoke marijuana grossly underachieve in life.
No link for the study, of course. I looked on the Addiction Journal website through all their 2007 press releases and didn't find the study. However, let's assume the study is legit. What's the conclusion, that people smoking marijuana in their early teens have lower employment and educational achievement? Okay, Doc, then why do you support a prohibition that allows 84% of high school seniors to say it is easy or fairly easy to get marijuana? I'd think if you were concerned about teens smoking pot, you'd make it as hard to get as cigarettes and liquor, wouldn't you?
This breakthrough research studied the progress of approximately 1,900 teens for 10 years and found that regular marijuana users were 3 times more likely to be unemployed or drop out of school than non-users.
You wouldn't suppose that marijuana tests that keep pot-smoking teens out of extracurricular activities, suspensions and expulsions for marijuana use, and marijuana tests for entry-level jobs lead to underachievement too, would you? Or that teens living in circumstances that would lead one to try to self-medicate with pot, like divorces, poverty, poor schools, urban violence, and lack of healthcare coverage, might lead to underachievement, whether they smoke pot or not? According to the government's own figures at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive, 54% of adults who didn't smoke pot this year are employed full-time. By comparison, 58% of adults who smoked pot more than 100 times this year are employed full-time.
The evidence of marijuana's negative effect on young people is so overwhelming that the scientist who conducted the research pronounced that marijuana is, quote, the drug for life's future losers, end quote.
You know, like Michael Phelps, Carl Sagan, George Washington, William Shakespeare, Sir Richard Branson, Sir Paul McCartney, Barack Obama, Willie Nelson, Sarah Silverman, Bill Maher, and the rest of those losers?
Young people who have the intelligence and motivation to go to college or technical school and begin smoking marijuana almost always abandon these aspirations for something less rigorous.
Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple Computer, quite famously admits to his pot and LSD use and tells of other Silicon Valley pioneers who basically invented personal computing and the internet based on insights from the herb.
The research is clear regarding marijuana's effect on the brain and behavior. Cannabis impairs memory, motivation, and something called executive functioning, which involves the ability to organize tasks, control impulses, and set priorities. In other words, most marijuana users adjust their life's goals and priorities downward to accommodate their impaired condition. It's hard to smoke weed 3 to 4 times per week and remain disciplined enough to get up early, think clearly enough, and work hard enough to attain the grades and skill necessary to succeed in something difficult.
I smoke weed every day, usually multiple times per day. I produce 55 minutes of recorded podcast content every weekday, requiring the skills of reading, concentration, analysis, memory, writing, editing, HTML coding, PHP coding, web management, sound engineering, sound editing, technical engineering, graphic design, and video production. In addition to that, I am the outreach coordinator for a national nonprofit requiring the skills of organizing, data entry, political lobbying, legal analysis, SQL database management, document production, and interpersonal communications. In my spare time, I appear at rallies and festivals requiring the skills of speech writing, public speaking, travel arrangement, organizing tasks, and public relations. Now, I'll admit that I dropped out of college way before I ever tried pot. Alcohol is what killed my college degree. So I am completely self-taught at all these skills, which I learned while I was smoking pot. I do all of these things simultaneously, requiring setting priorities, multitasking, and perseverance. I am at my desk working by 7 a.m. every day, and I rarely leave the desk, aside from meal breaks and dog walks, until 9 p.m. at night. Thank God I adjusted my goals and priorities downward. I surely wouldn't have the discipline necessary to succeed at something difficult.
Marijuana users are frequently unemployed or underemployed in vocations that are less challenging.
You mean like making a living sitting on a couch from 9 to 5 telling court-ordered marijuana rehabbers that they are losers?
Additionally, because the genetically engineered cannabis is so potent, its use is now associated with early onset psychosis and is now a risk factor for schizophrenia, depression, and anxiety disorders.
You know what else is a risk factor for schizophrenia? Being left-handed. It's true, there's been a study on it. Left-handers are more likely to be schizophrenic.
This is irrefutable in the current medical literature. The cost to an individual and our collective economic productivity as a result of marijuana's debilitating physical and mental effects are devastating. The bottom line is that decriminalizing marijuana will result in more mental illness, more addiction, and more uneducated and unemployable persons. We simply cannot afford this.
Actually, all this reefer madness is quite refutable. For example, the recent British meta-analysis of cannabis use and schizophrenia over the period 1996 to 2005, you know, the time when the new alleged superpot showed up, showed no increase in schizophrenia even as frequency of use increased and potency increased. And the bottom line is that the states that have decriminalized marijuana in the U.S. have shown no increases in mental illness, addiction, and uneducated and unemployable persons, and that decriminalization in the Netherlands, Spain, and Portugal have failed to show any of these predictions coming true. NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary,
whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy. The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at NORML.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
All right, folks, open wide and say aw, because it's time for your dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch. Welcome back to the show, Doctor.
Super to be here.
We've got a lot of stories that have been posted up on the Normal front page here with regards to cannabis science, and I wanted to run them by you because I know you've got an opinion on these things and have studied it for a long time. First of all, we had this look at this analysis of structural brain imaging. You know, this was one of the scary stories that came out from, you know, the ONDCP. They show the pictures of this is a normal brain and this is the brain with all the holes in it or whatever. And I was wondering if you could kind of explain what these imaging things do, what they mean, and what was the results of that analysis?
Sure. This is an intriguing review of over 40 studies on either structural changes or functional changes in the human brain in folks who've used cannabis a lot. And they usually take folks who've used at least daily for 2 years. Some of the other studies have even higher criteria, folks who've had to use at least 1,000 times in their lives. And as you look through it all, particularly for the structural stuff, it looks like it's all a wash. So of the studies that they found where people were actually taking pictures of the brain using those giant magnets, they're not finding in folks who started use as adults any difference in brain structure from users and non-users. And I'm talking real non-users, like folks who've really never smoked pot at all. The ones that do seem to show that effect, and the most salient one is this one where folks started heavy use really early in life. I'm talking pre-age 18, using 5-6 days a week. And so, of course, you know, that's inconsistent with Normal's recommendations, and we wouldn't want to encourage that. I don't think that those effects are huge, but it's definitely something we want to keep in mind. And then the functional stuff, it's intriguing because they've made a big deal out of less blood flow to the brain in people who are regular users, but the effects are small when you look closely at the individual studies. And hey, if your brain is feeling a little foggy, take a month off, and what a surprise, I'm sure things are going to be fine. And in some sense, I'm stunned that this was even published because it doesn't have such a big alarmist tone to it. But I also want to mention that these guys only focused on the studies that are actually out there in print. I've got a feeling that there are at least 8, 10, 12 studies that were done on this topic that found nothing. And the researchers just said, you know what, we're not going to be able to publish this because we haven't found anything. And so they stick it in their file drawers. And if we had put those in the mix too, we would find that these effects are actually even smaller once you average across all these ones that have nothing.
Hmm. Yeah, that's something a lot of people don't consider, is that these studies that don't find any, you know, good or bad results often get shelved. So that would be
exactly
interesting.
Exactly.
Now, another study, another meta-analysis that came out, had a look at head and neck squamous cell carcinoma, which is one of my favorite things to say, squamous. But this is, of course, head and neck cancers. And we've covered the research from Dr. Tashkin at UCLA and some of these other scientists who have found a reduced risk of cancer compared to people who smoke cigarettes, for example. But this study was quite different, and I think we ought to tell our listeners how this study came out as far as the reduced risk even compared to non-smokers.
Well, I was stunned by this because I thought, oh, it'll just be even. It'll just say there's no effect of smoking cannabis on these head and neck cancers. And I should remind folks that a couple years back, there was a study that came out suggesting elevated rates of head and neck cancers in folks who smoked cannabis. And it, you know, generated a lot of alarm. But when we take a good look at this, in fact, it looks like the folks who are smoking cannabis regularly are actually at significantly less risk for head and neck cancers. And I got a few ideas about why that might be and why the previous results turned out the way they were. As Bob Malamine has emphasized time and again, THC and a number of cannabinoids basically have this property that makes it so tumor cells don't tend to grow, particularly in the lungs, and that may explain why Tashkin hasn't been able to find elevated rates of lung cancer in folks who smoke cannabis but not tobacco. And I feel like this study is in some ways confirming that idea that, hey, there is some kind of anti-cancer properties associated with these antioxidants, these certain chemicals in cannabis. I'm not saying smoke cannabis as cancer prevention, but this certainly flies in the face of that previous finding that cancer of the head and neck was going to be more common in regular cannabis users. I also am concerned that maybe that previous study, some of the folks who said they smoked cannabis and not tobacco may have been tobacco smokers who just didn't want to fess up, and that the link between tobacco and head and neck cancer is quite genuine, and that maybe some of those guys slipped into the no tobacco group simply out of embarrassment or something like that.
Do you feel that's a problem now? In the past 10 or 20 years, as we've seen the cultural acceptance of tobacco smoking just plummet, that we are going to have some strange data like this from people not wanting to admit tobacco smoking?
I mean, it was worse when I was in L.A., but even in Albany now, if you're a cigarette smoker, it's filled with shame and guilt, and you're, you know, sent outside into the snow in order to do it. So I can certainly understand how the social desirability of that has decreased so badly that people are less willing to fess up than they were, you know, when some of these initial studies on the topic were first published back in the early 80s.
Well, that's got to be some kind of progress where people are more likely to admit they smoke pot than they smoke cigarettes. Well, another subject here, and this kind of goes to a larger arena here than just talking about medical marijuana, and it has to do with our healthcare system. And of course, the way that doctors get reimbursed for the medications that they give out. And one of the big problems we have, of course, is the expensive nature of American healthcare. We spend, you know, I think it's something like twice as much as any other country per patient, yet we only rank 37th in the World Health Organization as far as effective care. And we have a post up at normal.org about people thinking about the reimbursement for medical marijuana being able to save these health insurance companies huge amounts of money instead of having to pay for the opiate prescription drugs and benzodiazepines and other types of drugs that they have to be reimbursed for. Your thoughts on that?
Well, in fact, I mean, this is a hairy problem, and I'm no expert on healthcare policy, but let's just look at dollar for dollar comparing this to, say, Marinol. We've talked time and again how, you know, getting the pill version of THC and just THC is an expensive, indirect, inefficient way to get medicine into people's hands and bodies. And as an alternative, if we would reimburse for cannabis just in those situations, we'd already probably cut the price by, oh, at least three times, you know, so already we're in that. When you start looking at the opiate drugs, first of all, the fact that we will reimburse for those and not for medical cannabis brings up some interesting ethical and just practical implications. I can actually, you know, go to the doctor and get a prescription for a drug that's going to be markedly more impairing, higher in its addictive potential, and got a whole bunch of problems that medical cannabis doesn't. And my insurer is completely willing to shell out for that, but not for medical cannabis. It does seem like an inconsistency, shall we say. And I just feel like prevention in its own sense, so that as we know about, say, subsequent problems with weight loss or things like that in folks with some seriously debilitating diseases, this could be a really efficient way to avoid having to prescribe really, really expensive medications down the line and even pay for some rather expensive procedures. So I'd say if, you know, we're looking at economics alone, this certainly seems like it would be completely reasonable to reimburse for medical cannabis.
Yeah, the amount of money that could be saved, certainly we'll have to get some economic types to take a look at that, but I would imagine it's going to be, you know, millions, perhaps billions of dollars that could be saved here. You mentioned Marinol. And this is also something that's up on our front page right now, as CBS News has quoted you in one of their stories, you know, that asks whether the pot pill, what they call Marinol, actually works. And there's a quote from a Dr. Kleber as well, who's treats people for marijuana dependence and so on. And one of the themes that I always see reflected in this is that they talk about the high from marijuana as if that's, you know, a negative side effect, as if that's something that's so unwanted from the use of medical marijuana that we're desperate to find some way of getting this medicine to people without the high. And it always kind of makes me laugh because I've had a prescription for Vicodin before and I've never been more high in my life. So I was just wondering, you know, if you could comment a little bit more about this Marinol and this notion of trying to eliminate the high.
It's funny because, I mean, I love Herb Kleber. He's a wonderful guy, but we're really on opposite sides about this. First of all, anybody who's got cancer or AIDS or something like that, I think they deserve any single thing that could possibly elevate their mood a little because, come on, this is really a bummer. But also, tolerance to low medicinal doses of cannabis, at least the subjective effects, is up, you know, at a reasonable pace so that people who, for example, I've known who've used for years and years medicinally actually don't experience much intoxication at their regular doses anymore because, you know, they've been doing it for years and years. So I don't feel like that's a key issue. But the tacit assumption is that the high is some kind of wildly impairing freak out sort of high, mm-hmm. when in fact it's, you know, usually mild elevation in mood and no impairment in cognitive functioning or things like that, particularly in experienced users. So I can't even draw any parallels to, say, the first few weeks of using an anxiolytic drug, a whole bunch of the pain meds, as you mentioned. Some of the antihistamines that are available now are just incredibly debilitating and would make you retarded, and we have new data suggesting that they can impair driving. And we're going to be worried about this. And then as I emphasized to Herb and basically, they did a video of us talking to Dr. LaPook on his website. He's the guy who's on that show with Katie Couric in the morning. Basically, you know, this is not the same medication. Cannabis has over 60 cannabinoids, many of which have a whole lot of effects that you don't get just from THC. Marinol is THC all by itself in this sesame oil. You have to take it orally. It takes a long time to have its impact. Obviously, inhaled vapor can have activity within a few seconds. So why deprive, say, somebody who can tell a migraine is coming on the rapid relief simply because we're so worried about having them swallow a pill instead of inhaling vapor?
Yeah. And before I let you go, just one other thing, too, that I see pop up in these stories all the time has to do with them always bringing up the term smoked marijuana. Do you have any predictions on when these doctors will ever hear of a pot brownie?
It's so stunning, given, you know, the Alice B. Toklas recipes were a joke in the 60s,
yeah.
And it's now 2009, and that still hasn't come around. And the vaporizer information is not hitting the airwaves in the way I'd like to see it happen as well. And I just got a paper accepted showing that in at least four of our case studies, using the vaporizer actually improved lung function in some regular cannabis users. So we've got to spread the word on this. Fortunately, that new Soderbergh movie actually has a couple of vaporizer lines in it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if popular culture suddenly, you know, understands that the vaporizer is an option, maybe we'll quit hearing all this silliness about smoked pot and lung cancer and things like that.
Yeah, they always want to bring that up in the context of, you know, the FDA is in charge of approving, you know, safe and effective drugs. And I always like to remind people that the FDA approved thalidomide, fen-phen, and Vioxx. So let's...
Good example.
All right. Well, Dr. Earlywine, thank you for your opinions on those stories. We'll keep up. And again, if you got questions for Dr. Earlywine, we'll read them here on the stash and get the direct answers. Just send your emails to 420research@gmail.com. Thanks again, Mitch, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com
or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Hey Tokers, this is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon Bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of Normal Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest, Friday, August 28th, here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Reggae Wednesday, and today we hear from popular Swedish reggae band Rebel Youth Family with their song Eyes Red. Rebel Youth Family's music is strictly modern roots reggae and dancehall. The band have made a name for themselves performing at clubs and music festivals. Rebel Youth Family's tunes are aired on international radio stations, and the band produces dub plates for sound systems worldwide. Currently, Rebel Youth are preparing for two new album releases. The band make many recordings with up-and-coming Swedish reggae artists and are producing new releases of fresh roots and dancehall rhythms every month. If you want to know more about Rebel Youth, check out myspace.com/rebelyouths, plural. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Rebel Youth Family with Eyes Red.
Yes, I brand new tune from the Rebel Youth Studio. Old rhythm number one, dramatic control. Yes, I some 90s. Well, me say, my eye red, walking down the street, but around you tuning on me head. Cricket is the name of this, I want not it red, not said, Jah, I know. To them, I go play my juice on the radio. On my way to the Rebel Youth Studio, they bust a new reading for the next day show. Yes, my eye red, walking down the street, but around you tuning on me head. Cricket is the name of this, I want not it red, not said, not said. Well, again, again. I'm gonna need no gun for make your part. lighting on the air. Now come follow me. Woman and man side by side. No, quick and go and take up on a lyrical ride. No, let me be your guide. No, everyone start to dance once them inside. No, good selection is select and provide. No, find your body, girl, and move your feet. All I never can fit with. Make your belly full, take some feed. Well, again, me say my eye red. Walking on the sheep and my own.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with a reminder that in all the hubbub over Seattle Hemp Fest and the upcoming NormalCon, don't forget about the debut of Normal Show Live this Labor Day weekend, Saturday, September 5th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be 2 hours of serious talk radio about marijuana and its users and how we can go about legalizing it. It's going to be available through blogtalkradio.com. We're still taking your donations for promotions for the show. And also, Herb Age Design is still sponsoring me in the August 28th El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest. We've got lots of stashers who've made a per wing pledge. To make your pledge, send an email to stash@normal.org. All the money raised will go toward promoting Normal Show Live. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.